You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. My name is John Rabin, and this is episode 54. Recording this on July 3rd, but I'm recording this late, so there's a good chance the majority of you will listen to this tomorrow, which will be July 4th. Now, I'm going to do you a service with this podcast today, and that is when you light your charcoal to grill today, you want to, as soon as you light it and you get it going, start this podcast. Like, and when I give you the signal here, I'll give you a pause here in a second, and then from then on, then you can listen to my rambling. But then when it's over, your charcoal will be ready. I'm going to make this podcast episode the length of time it takes for your charcoal to get ready, which is about 20 minutes. Sure, you could use a timer, but this is more of a novelty. It's a novelty that we're going to do. Okay, get ready. All right. Okay, go do it. I'll wait. Back? Okay. Welcome back. Like I said, in about 20 minutes, I'll wrap this shit up, and then you can start grilling, because you can't, and if you're using propane, you can fuck right off. The whole idea of Hank Hill selling propane and propane accessories was a joke, because nobody in Texas who's a real Texan uses propane. They just don't. Unless you have money. But for the novelty, I guess. But no, charcoal tastes better. We all know this. This is not what I wanted to talk about today. But happy 4th of July. I'm going to be working, so I get to see who comes into a restaurant on the fucking 4th of July and just go, "Really?" to every single person that comes in. I won't, but I'll be thanking it. There's a reason they put me in the back. Not to talk to anybody. So here's the deal, guys. Two episodes ago, episode 52, if I'm doing my math right. 54 minus. Yeah, 52. I had issues with, I was under a lot of anxiety and overthinking and just in my own head. And the reason is because my girlfriend went through surgery this week, and it was successful. It was to remove a fibroid that has been making her sick for like 8 months. It took that long to discover it, to get all, you know, to get tests, to do everything, to get the right doctor and to get the surgery done. That took place earlier this week and is a huge relief. And she's going to be recuperating for the next 4 weeks. So I'll be definitely helping her with that. But I mean, that weighed heavily. When I recorded episode 52, two Wednesdays ago, we had just gotten, news about, just basically gotten a date for when the surgery really was going to take place, like a sooner date. So it was like, I don't know, it shit got real basically. And it was like, okay, now having it just a vague time and not knowing is better than like when you know that it's when the day's going to be, that it's going to be July 1st, and then you got to wait, and the waiting is just shitty, man. And it was really, obviously, it's just, It's been hell. It's been quite an ordeal for her. Because you know, the doctors in the hospital, Dr. Brightwell in the hospitals in Seton here in Austin, those guys just phenomenal, just top notch. And but it was difficult getting to a good doctor or getting to somebody that actually listened to her. And it's really disheartening. It just, the amount of people that you have to harass people to get them to do their job. And in the medical field, that's a bunch of horse shit. But you know what? Just in general, people just look, you just do your fucking job. So you're unhappy, okay? Well, you're just making things worse for everybody else, especially in the medical field. We had this lab fucked up her tests 3 times, which delayed getting, you know, ruling stuff out and moving on to another test to ultimately figure out what was going on. And the scariest part was that with the location of the fibroid, if there had been too much complications, then there was a chance that they were going to have to do a hysterectomy. So she was going to have to wake up and find out that, you know, that she couldn't have kids. Like, it just, I mean, you know, like that weighing heavily on your, I mean, I can't even imagine. Like, I was in shock, just kind of going, fuck, all right. And then right in the middle of all of this, you know, when she was, you know, she's making, scheduling it out, making sure everything's, you know, getting mentally prepared, like the day before going into surgery, we were going to go to the hospital, and, you know, all this weighing on her, she turns to me and goes, don't forget to bring a jacket. It's cold in the hospital, which is just, that just is the epitome of our relationship. And actually, like the stereotypical man woman relationship kind of a deal, in that kind of dynamic where it's like, you know, yeah, I'm gonna take care of you, don't forget to bring a sweater, yeah, all right. Like, if she hadn't have said shit, I would have froze my ass off in that cold ass hospital while I was waiting. So I'm like, really, in the middle of everything, she it's just amazing. It's amazing, but it turned out all right. So, quite a relief. My brain is fucking fried. Like, I'm just, like, we slept like 12 hours on Tuesday. And obviously she needs the rest. And apparently I did too, because I was just stressed the fuck out. But everything's good, man. It's going all right. Oh, you know, the thing is that in this whole ordeal, there were doctors who didn't order the CT scan at the time and stuff, you know, that ultimately discovered the fibroid, you know, where, what it was, because for the longest time, because she'd been sick for so long that we didn't know what was causing it. Didn't know why, you know, her health was deteriorating like it was. And the thing is that it's not that there were doctors, it's not that doctors don't know what they're doing, like they're inept, or that, you know, they're inferior, that they're shit doctors or anything. I think what it was is that it really seemed, when they're not really listening to a patient sometimes, it really is a perception issue. It's a doctor who hears some symptoms and like looks at some tests and some charts and immediately already suspects something. And so it doesn't matter what you say to them, because they've already made up their mind what it probably is. So automatically their attention is shifted to something they got to do later. Like they're already moving on with their day. And I think that's, you see people, you know, just human nature. You see people do that all the time. And I think that's, it's a nice reminder to always get a second opinion. Always get, do not rely on one person's judgment. When, you know, in info gathering and stuff, just because you're basically relying on, you know, their level of objectivity, and you don't know if, you know, where they're at. But I think also you can tell, I think if you really pay, you can tell if they're really listening to you or not, or they're just going through the motions. But just in general, it's, you can't rely on one person in this day and age. It's just people, you know, because we don't listen to each other really. No, we don't really have discussions. We have, we basically take turns giving our opinions that are unwavering. And I think that translates into people's jobs and their professions. It's not just an annoying Facebook post anymore. I mean, it's also, you know, it's also how people are living their lives and why you can't change anybody's mind on their politics, because they're already set and they don't want to listen. But there's no shortage of advice, though, is there? There's a buddy of mine just posted on Facebook, and because he says, I need structure. He wanted to know a workshop or a class, like a screenwriting class or workshop, you know, the screenplay, you know, to write screenplays, and just needed some, wanted some help. And he lives in fucking New York City, which there's got to be at least 100 of those classes to choose from. You know, you need a starting point, maybe some advice. And I shit you not, there's 40 goddamn comments underneath that thread, and they're all, none of them are about classes. It's what he asked for. He asked for a class. And there was a range of advice from, this is the book that I taught myself. You should try this. You know, how about the library? Good one. The library, you say. You mean read? That's not what he asked. Also, all the people that commented, none of them have written a fucking screenplay. Or if they have, it wasn't successful enough to warrant that this is what I did. I don't care what you did. You are as unfamous as me. We are an equal level of success in this thing, in this venture that I want to pursue. Why am I getting advice from you? It would be like if I asked about joke structure and I was working on a bit that I couldn't figure out, and all of my friends who don't do comedy gave their advice. And you know what? They would. I would get comments from people who have not done stand-up or just, you know, I've done an open mic once. Here's what I did. Thanks. Thanks a lot. It's unbelievable. People will it's like the last thing you want to do. I really need to get some good advice. Maybe I'll ask Facebook. Seriously, I don't know. All right, yeah, go ahead. You do that. All right, so there is one other thing. I don't have to really, I don't have to promote this, this podcast that I listen to very much, because it's fairly popular. But it's an NPR podcast called Hidden Brain, which is basically the description. Just Shankar Vedantam uses science and storytelling to reveal the unconscious patterns that drive human behavior, shape our choices, and direct our relationships. It's fantastic. Absolutely love this podcast. Because they're all like just under an hour, anywhere from like 45 minutes to an hour. And one of the, they re-aired one from last year called The Lazarus Drug, the episode's called. And it's about naloxone, which is the opioid overdose reversal medication that's like a spray, you know, that you put up someone's nose. And it was an interesting thing because they were talking about the parallels were like one of the comparisons with human behavior. It had to do with seatbelts, where adding seatbelts to cars, you would think that made this would then save lives and make driving safer. But the way that humans are, human behavior is that now that you've got a seatbelt on, you're like, fuck yeah, and then you drive faster. You actually drive more recklessly because there's safety features and you feel like you've got a, you know, you're not driving as careful because you've got more safety features. And the idea is about the naloxone is trying to make this more more available everywhere so that when people overdose, that there'll be somebody who has this available to be able to help them. But the idea is that if the more that this is readily available, will heroin addicts stop being as careful because they know that, you know, that the overdose, dying from overdose is not as big. Like there's, you know, you get what I'm saying. So it's a very interesting podcast about that. And they interview a couple of addicts. Well, one of them, a former addict. But they were talking about it, and I think they made the best point, which is that if it wasn't available, would that make people stop doing drugs? And obviously no, you know, so you might as well have it available to save some lives, even if there are risks and it's going to, it's going to make some people say, fuck it. Because those people are already the type of people that when they hear about a bad batch of heroin that has, that's been dosed with fentanyl or whatever, that's what they want to go get because they're like, holy shit, that must be really strong. I want the biggest bang for my buck. I'll just, you know, use less. And it's just, yeah. And it's crazy. It's a crazy mentality and I totally understand it cause I was there, at one point. And it's just one of those things that you can't, the whole thing reminded me of, it just made me think about it and realize that, you know, we need to do everything that we can to help. You know, we need to make naloxone available. We need to make treatment available and affordable to where it doesn't cost $30,000 in order to, you know, to go when you finally need help. Because that's the thing is that they were telling a story about somebody who went to rehab, but it was the only thing covered. You know, they went to a rehab that was the only thing covered by Medicaid. And it was just a 28-day rehabs are bullshit. That's not long enough. It needs to be a 90-day. But I think that's the thing, is that we're not going to keep people. You know, the opioid epidemic is not going to go away because of one solution. And it's not going to go away. All we can do is make things available so that people, because people are going to have to save themselves. And you've got to just, but you got to make it available and affordable so that they can. You know, that's just what I was thinking, that they, you know, that it's really, it's still going to be a personal choice. It's still people have to be at a certain point to where they actually want to get help. But we need to have things available so that when they want help, they can get it. That's what we need to do. Yeah, let's go, everybody. Let's do it. I fixed it. I figured it out. Yeah. You get what I'm saying. So, anyway, it's a good podcast. I really got a lot out of that episode. So, hang on. It's approaching the time. Give me a second. I'm looking at it. Oh, it's close. Can you feel it? It's close. Come on. And now, right now, ding, everybody. You can go cook on your charcoal. The charcoal is fucking ready. If you did exactly what I asked and used this, your charcoal is ready. Unless, of course, you smothered it or you fucked it up. But if you did it correctly and you wait, then this is the time right now. Happy 4th of July. Don't burn the meat. This has been Yes, I'm Still Sober. I'm John Rabin. Later.